Haven't chatted with a state representative, Tacky Chan of Quincy, since before Thanksgiving. Hey, Tacky.
Hey, Joe. Glad to be back after a couple of weeks, and I hope you enjoy your Thanksgiving.
I did. Thank you. It was quiet, but nice. How about yourself?
We did okay. I mean, it rained Thanksgiving, so obviously we didn't do anything that day. But Saturday, I cooked a meal for lunch. We did the outside seating with my brother, my sister-in-law, and their son across from each other from the fire pit. And we discovered that hot food, even on a cool day, gets cold really fast.
Yes. Figuring out how the pilgrims dealt with it in the original one, right?
Well, exactly. It was piping hot coming out of the kitchen. Then it went into the yard, and it wasn't nearly as hot after a few minutes.
Yeah, eat fast, right? Exactly. Of course, it was a very quiet weekend in Quincy, and what normally would have been the busiest weekend of the year.
Yeah, I actually did my food shopping on Friday after Thanksgiving for the Saturday luncheon, which actually worked out pretty well. You're right. It was very quiet out there in the stores. Even I did a little bit of shopping online on Black Friday. I finally picked up a new cell phone. I was talking about a little earlier. So I finally got a new cell phone after my one I'm using here now for video calls. So in the new COVID world, trying to find creative ways of not spending too much money while still able to get the job done.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, speaking of that, I think one of the major cable carriers just came out with they're going to start charging people if they use a certain amount of data, over what's normally allowed. So that's unfortunate.
Yeah, Comcast Xfinity is going to increase people's bills by $10 starting in the month of April. Notifications are going to go out in January as they do the analysis of people's individual usage. If you use more than 1.2 terabytes of data, then you are going to be surcharged for being a heavy user. About two-thirds plus of the country is already using this process. This is not a new thing. It's just the Northeast Corridor is basically the last place they haven't done it yet. This is somewhat troubling in the sense that we're all working from home. I've had to upgrade my internet. I've said that multiple times. I'm sure others have well. And the increased usage is much more than ever. I mean, I used to be able to use 5 gigabytes at home a month. Now, my latest Comcast shows that I'm using 330 gigabytes, which is far times lower than the 1.2 terabytes that the Comcast Xfinity is talking about in surcharge. However, if you're a YouTube streamer, if you're a heavy gamer, if you're doing 6K, I can't believe you're using with 6K, 6K streaming movies, you may run into some issues. But according to Comcast, 95% of all the customers use less than 300 gigabytes, including the pandemic period. So your kids may be on video schooling and you may be running Netflix and you have some gaming and you're working. Most households won't crack 300 gigabytes of even of all that usage. That being said, we've inquired to Comcast about some data on different household usages in aggregate in different communities to get a better sense of how many customers it impacts. So the question is, can I do anything about it, right? It's always the question. The answer is no.
Ah, okay.
The Telecom Act back in 94, I think, was it 93? I get my dates mixed up. But that basically deregulated the telecommunication industry, which includes the internet. And there's been modifications to the Telecom Act over the years. But fundamentally, it's an open-ended free market enterprise, even though people like, well, they got one choice at Comcast. When Quincy can have another cable company, and they chose not to in the past. I know for a fact Verizon Files was looking to come here, and the city chose not to engage in a franchise agreement. Hmm. Basically, a franchise agreement is the agreement to allow them to come to the city, to wire up the city, put their lines on the poles. And they need an agreement with National Grid or Verizon, or if you're not in a N-Grid territory, N-Star territory or other electrical companies, but Verizon owns the rest of the poles and you have to work on an agreement with them and then permission from the city. And that includes some kind of mitigation. QATV is an example of that. Part of your budget comes from Xfinity Comcast as part of the franchise agreement.
Right.
So, this is something communities choose to do or not to do. If you want to invite another telecom company to come in to wire your city, the city has to engage in a franchise agreement to do so. I do understand that there is an expiration to provide our own internet funded by city taxpayers initially because of the capital cost. And then becoming ratepayer paid as an individual sign up for the city program, they would still need to get permission from Verizon on a lease agreement to use their poles.
Oh, okay.
And they would have to pay for the wiring up of fiber optics, which if you look around us, there's a lot of poles, a lot of homes.
Yep.
And there's a lot of underground infrastructure too, and get to Quincy Center and other locales. And you have to have enough bandwidth to ensure that the person at the end of the line still has enough speed. So cable infrastructure for internet is not cheap. And even Verizon hasn't fully fiber optic the city. I'm an example part of the city where I don't have fiber optics. But down here where I live, it's still alloyed copper. Mm-hmm. So it's where my phone line has, I guess I'm one of the last ones with a phone line, has sketchy service, which, you know, I have to call Verizon for
work. Yeah, so, which is good if the power goes out, though. You still have your telephone.
That is true. And I don't have to charge it like my cell phone.
Right.
Yeah, people want to know how come that's true when the power goes out. It's because Verizon, as a central service, has to maintain a separate supply, energy supply. And telephone lines actually do not use very much voltage, very, very low voltage.
Right. So I think it's like 7 watts or something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can run that off a massive generator at Verizon as long as needed. And they're strategically located to be able to provide that emergency power. That's why the offices are where they are. So this is my crash course on telecommunications.
Yes.
So, you know, so that's basically the answer. So, you know, we're going to go petition the FCC and FTC about this down in Washington. But the reality is that they've already implemented this program in over 2/3 of the country. So the fact it's been implemented without any problems elsewhere is the indicator that it's not going to have a problem here.
Okay. All right. Something to certainly be aware of and watch out for. You know, we're seeing a surge in cases post-Thanksgiving. Do you think that might have an impact on what people do around Christmas?
I hope so. I'm hoping that, like a lot of folks, you know, Thanksgiving is the major holiday because of the nature of a three-day weekend, as opposed to kind of a family kids at home holiday, which is more of a Christmas type holidays, is my experience. I mean, I can't speak for other households, but, you know, family time was more of a Christmas period. You know, Christmas, New Year, people take time off. Thanksgiving was kind of the mash dash with friends and family and the chaos associated with it. On a personal level, I like Thanksgiving more because I think it's more of a family event. It's eating. You don't have to bring gifts. Everyone brings a food item. It's much less. I don't have the Black Friday shop, so to speak, for Thanksgiving.
Right.
Being me. But, yeah, I mean, the numbers are going to spike nationally. It'll spike in Massachusetts as people have been traveling. Unfortunately, I think people are going to find out that their travels has resulted in the death of a family member or severely ill one. I'm sorry to put it that bluntly, but that's the reality. Also, do remind folks that the numbers you're seeing right now are 2 days after the fact. Most COVID tests takes 48 hours to return. So that what you're seeing is 2 days ago. You know, some may be 24 hours, some may be same day, but most of them are 2 days numbers. And there are some aggregate numbers from companies that may be a little slow. So I'm not saying you shouldn't take numbers seriously. You take it very seriously. But just be mindful of the fact that 4 days ago was well almost 5,000, because that's the number that came out yesterday. And you see 10,000 on Monday. That means you had a massive spike, you know, on Friday and Saturday. So, yeah, you should take this wicked serious. Even Quincy, I mean, we're approaching 1,000.
Yep.
That would be, if we get there, it would be, you know, 20% of the state total. So, Brockton, Chelsea, Everett, Boston, Framingham, even places you don't think of like Rehoboth is at 7% daily average. So even though your population areas are small and its number, COVID numbers will be smaller because of smaller population. When you look at percentage of the population that is COVID positive result of testing, it is an alarming number. And secondly, I'd like to remind folks, just because you see the COVID test numbers, that's not the final number. You may have a neighbor that's COVID positive has not been tested yet.
Right.
And the nature, and as we talked about before, well, almost 40% of all people who tested positive do not show symptoms.
Yep. Yep.
Which again, remind folks about mask wearing, in particular, in addition to washing your hands and generally good hygiene, you know, it's so important because of respiratory fluids. So, when I'm talking now, I expel more respiratory fluids. If I'm jogging, I expel more respiratory fluids. So, you know, just be mindful that, you know, someone's looking great, feeling great, but doesn't necessarily mean they're not positive. And this is why this is such a scary thing. And again, this wintertime, you have other diseases that are normally out there. So I have a friend just text me last night. He couldn't talk to me because he had come down with something that resembles the narovirus. Mm. So, we all know what that's about, and that's not fun.
Not at all, yeah.
So, you know, we've started the standard flu, cold, stomach bug, plus the fatigue caused by COVID causes stress and fatigue. And, of course, people getting stress around the holiday season, which has other health implications too.
Yeah. So is the legislature be involved at all in the distribution of the vaccine when it gets here, Jackie?
No, I have no say in the matter. So if you call me, I can't help you on this.
Okay. Okay. Good to know.
You know, we're looking maybe 300,000 doses coming here sometime this winter / spring to Massachusetts from the CDC. The governor, DPH, is going to mandate the priorities. It appears to be similar to the other priorities, but I don't have anything super definitive yet. But it should follow other states where people in assisted living facilities are the first ones to get vaccinated, given the horrific and sad death rate we had in assisted living facilities this past summer, followed by direct impact healthcare workers, people that are regularly in contact with COVID-positive patients. As we've probably seen news stories, healthcare workers have contracted COVID, died in the same hospitals they work in, yep, trying to care for their patients. There are sick healthcare workers around the country right now trying to work through being COVID positive on top of the fatigue they're feeling. And retired healthcare workers are getting in there, as well as people volunteering to do non-COVID work to support hospitals while not directly involved in COVID patients. But, you know, obviously the hospital has other functionalities beyond just patient care. So volunteers are out there. So that seems to be the first two. And then it will probably move through people who are immune compromised that are not in assisted living facilities that I am concerned about, because we need to get the word out that they should be vaccinated when the governor says that we're moving to that stage of vaccination.
Yeah.
And so if you're living with someone who's immune compromised like myself, you really should get vaccinated too. And the question is whether or not you living with someone immune compromised will also receive vaccination regardless of age. And then, you know, you and I are in that age bracket as well. So we're probably on a higher list than other folks. And it appears both Pfizer and Moderna are both two doses.
Right. So yep.
300,000 doses, it really means 150,000.
That's right. Yeah. You know, you may have heard the White House task force recommended more general rollback here in Massachusetts to help control the spread. What do you think about that?
Well, it's again up to us, right? I mean, I've repeated myself multiple times. The governor has, every news network has, is that the ability to keep our economy going is dependent on us wearing our masks, being clean, being mindful, keep away from each other. You're sick, don't go out there. If you got a cold or the flu or the narovirus, stay at home. Call in sick. If you can do it, do it. And, you know, obviously we're asking for employers to please be flexible about this for your employees. Now, I do understand everyone's a lot of stress economically, and, you know, people need to make money. But for Pete's sakes, you know, please be also cooperative. If you have a sick employee, your business and your customers are going to be in deep trouble.
That's right.
Not everybody can do video calling like we're doing now. I really do understand that. I understand 65% of the population does not telecommute to work. I understand that too. You know, we have to kind of work together on this. If you become, anybody becomes just stubborn about any of those issues, it just puts us all at risk. Can another lockdown happen? Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think the mayor of Boston, suggests that that's the next step in Boston, at least.
Yes, dense populations in particular need to be super cautious because of the nature of the spread. I mean, Hong Kong, for example, this week has gone down back to 2-person sittings in restaurants, must be open air, nothing open after 10 p.m. Sounds familiar, right? That we're doing here.
Yeah.
And they're now requiring all government employees to work from home again.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, they're in wave number, 3. Korea's in wave number 4. And even Shanghai in China has locked down. People are stopping attention to China. And news coming out of there is pretty tough, given the fact they threw out so many journalists.
Right.
Yeah, Shanghai's got into a partial lockdown right now. I think about almost 500 cases. I have to look, I think, but that's a city of almost 10 million people. But again, this doesn't take long to get around 2.5 infections per individual infected.
Yep.
So again, it's up to us. If you don't want, if you want to avoid a lockdown, then we have to do. And again, I ask both people and employers to try to be flexible and conscientious about how to handle this.
Yeah. We switch gears a little bit, Tacky, and talk about the police reform bill that was passed by the legislature this week.
Sure. You know, as a response to Floyd's death's murder out in Minnesota, we all saw this summer a lot of protesting from people seeking change, particularly the police department, and talking more about systemic racism and injustice, generally speaking, as well. In response, the Black Latino Caucus this summer put down a 10-point plan, of which six are legislatively driven, which most of us agreed upon. But as time go along, that was no longer the six to 10-point plan that became coming out of both the House and Senate this past fall. Actually, it was August, actually, I think. But wow, everything seems like so long ago now. And we voted for a constitutional committee report this week. And as you saw when the Patriot Ledger, I voted no. There was 92 yeses, I believe 67 noes. And for edification of the public, the override number in the House is 105. So the governor vetoes, the House does not have an override capacity. So what does it do? Basically, it sets up a training program you saw in the news. It sets up a license program for the police force, which is one of the few states we do not have a statewide uniform licensing program. It sets up a definitive disciplinary program, creates a number of commissions, broad range of commissions, Black, Latino, disabilities, looking at correctional facilities, civil service, and so forth. But, you know, I've had a lot of other problems with the bill. So, for example, the bill addresses collective bargaining agreements. It suspends collective bargaining agreements associated with disciplinary actions. Most people don't realize that collective bargaining actually dictates the due process for disciplinary action for union employees. And I still believe in the right to contract. The legislature should not get involved in contracting unless there's an overriding public purpose. So, for example, it is the general laws that prohibits contracting of minors. Minors can't contract as a result of the law. It is not a constitutional issue. Especially children can't have a right to contract unless states say otherwise. And, you know, we're talking about something at that level where the government as a public policy should interfere with contracts. Here we suspend their contracts regarding due process and disciplinary actions. The composition of the board is severe majority, 6 out of 9. However, you should have perhaps 4 out of 9 to have at least some experience in law enforcement. So you're going to have the majority of people that have zero law enforcement experience or procedure or processes of overseeing law enforcement. That's like saying having law and lawyers oversee lawyers. That's like saying that you have non-doctors overseeing doctors. You have never practiced medicine, so you're going to tell doctors what to do. Never go to med school. Never open a biology book. Yeah, there's no prerequisites for that level of education requirement. And also, there's no one in law enforcement or former law enforcement permitted to work in the new agency. So you got people training police officers, never trained police officers.
Where are these people going to be coming from? Who's going to appoint them?
Well, it's going to be appointed by the commission. The governor gets to appoint a three, the AG appoints three, and the governor and AG has to agree on three others.
Okay.
Composition of a rank under sergeant police officer, a person from the Minority Police Officer Association, and a police chief from the state. So you got those three law enforcement. You have someone from a civil rights background, someone from a legal background. And then there's some combination of selection process presented by other organizations, which actually takes some of the choice process away from the governor and AG. So even then, there's not that much flexibility for either one of them. It's going to be presented by third party, a list of five names. There's a couple of different third parties involved in the statute, in the bill. The bill's called the governor's office.
Right.
Sorry. It's like I said, it seems like forever ago. Even this week feels like forever. So, I mean, there is even not that flexibility if the governor says, hey, I want to appoint, you know, let's say a PhD in criminal justice from Harvard University. There is not that much flexibility in the appointment.
Okay. Yeah, and I know the state police took issue with the fact that the law enforcement was not really involved in the drafting of the legislation.
That's correct. I mean, we did receive a huge number of testimony from this public, but in terms of collaboration, it became increasingly clear that that was not happening. I don't care what it says and what other people tell me, that did not happen. You know, as people know, I mean, both sides are arguing. I did read your emails. I did listen to people who want to chat about the issue. I ask questions to folks, which they find annoying, and I will ask a question to them, which I find pretty remarkable, why I'm not allowed to ask questions to people who call me. So if you do call me, prepare to answer, you know, I will ask a question. You know, there's also this issue of qualified immunity here about it. I'm not going to, that's like a whole 30-minute lesson itself, but short of it is that qualified immunity protects the city of Quincy from being sued if the city can prove that the public employee was working in capacity of his duties that was not unreasonable for the standard of work. People think it's immunity for cops. It's immunity for the city of Quincy, everybody.
Is that included in the final version?
What they did was that they did what we call something I still don't understand. It's a legal term called civil immunity. So what would happen if a police officer is decertified, they automatically loses their civil immunity.
Mm-hmm.
Which, for the love of Pete, I still don't know what civil immunity means.
No, oh, interesting. Okay.
Room, it means that the police officer can be sued individually, and you can also go after the city of Quincy. I presume that. I don't know. I suspect a lawsuit's coming.
Yeah.
Get a better definition of that as soon as tried.
Do you think this will impact people getting into law enforcement?
Maybe. You know, as we all know, there are not a lot of bad police officers in Massachusetts. We've had less than 5 police-related shootings. Actually, it was exactly 5 last year. I don't know what the number is this year. The question is about other types of misconduct that does not relate to a shooting.
Right.
Very rarely do you hear about anybody getting shot in a car in Massachusetts. This ain't some other of these states where people get gun happy, including the police officers. Do I think there's a racial bias in some police forces? Absolutely. I think every individual is a human being, and they have these preconceived notions about a number of different things. And those are some things that should be addressed, but this type of disciplinary action probably won't, you know. And there's also this kind of weird appeals process. So normally what happens here is that you have an appeals process to civil service. Why? Well, you apply for an exam for civil service, and civil service employees appeal to civil service to ensure that the municipality is complying with the law and complying with the contract of how to implement disciplinary actions. Mm-hmm. If it's beyond the scope, you do that. Here it's a final stop at this commission. And the only way I can think you can appeal is going to Superior Court directly, which is very expensive.
Yeah.
Well, you have to go to the DALA, which is the Division of Administrative Law Appeals, which does not do employment stuff. Mm-hmm. And if you have a discrimination case, if you think the commission has the discriminate against you regarding your punishment, your penalties, you know, I don't think you get the right to go to the Mass Commission Against Discrimination. I think they take that away too.
Hmm.
So let's say you're a person of color and you've been disciplined and you believe you've been discriminated against in your discipline. You really have no recourse.
It's one of the rare instances that I can recall of the Quincy delegation being split on an issue. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, it is very rare. As people are hearing now, people always, you know, I won't name names, but, you know, I've taken crap from folks saying, oh, you just vote the party line. You don't know what the hell you're doing. I'm like, yeah, I do. I mean, I'm not expected to know what a bridge naming does. Trust me, I vote for bridge naming in another community in Western Massachusetts. I'm not going to learn that in detail.
Right.
But, I mean, most bills, you know, I do pay some attention, as you can tell. And I do form an opinion about it. You vote the way you're going to vote. So, yeah, it is very rare to have the delegation split up their vote. As we all know, when you vote, there's people going to be happy and there's going to be people who are very unhappy. And again, this is like any other bill I vote on. There's a group of unhappy folks and a group of happy folks.
Yeah.
You know, this is also kind of one of those very important issues. And I do believe you have to get it right, because if you don't, there's lawsuits flying. Plus the fact that if it's not properly implementable, you know, you're not going to see a vast improvement. I mean, I suggested a climate survey of police departments, which didn't make it into the final bill. It made it out of the House version, but didn't make it out of the final bill, which I think would have been much more valuable. every police department's different. Every police employee is different. Every police employee has an opinion about the work environment, same as you and I on this call. And sometimes they feel intimidated from expressing their own opinion inside their own workplace. Why are they any different? They're not. So, you know, they should be workplace surveys about the climate. If you don't feel welcome, it causes new stress, like any employee.
I think the governor has not signaled one way or the other which way he's leaning on this, but it's drastically different from a bill that he proposed back in the summer times. Are you hearing any sound?
Yeah, no, you're right. The governor proposed similar to Black Latino Caucus. They formed a sort of a surveying commission. It's balanced between law enforcement and private citizens. Follows a very similar processes for licensing, a much more less detailed, no real advisory committees about this. There's a lot of advisory committees as part of this process. They don't, he didn't address how investigations occur in shootings. Really, we kind of touched the edges of that. The AG's not super involved in the governor's version, that the version we was voted on this week. So it was a much more scaled down, smaller version. I thought could have used more meat on the bones, quite frankly, as a regulatory guy. You still need a little more meat to flush out the details of how it's going to be done. But yeah, this is nothing of what the governor proposed earlier this summer. The governor has 10 days from Tuesday to decide how he's going to handle this. He can amend the bill and send it back. We have to accept or reject the amendments. If we reject the amendments, then the governor has 10 days to veto it, which, if the calendar is correct, the 1st to the 10th, 10th to the 24th, but realistically, if he sends it back with amendments, it takes us 2 to 5 days to process amendments. If it's a flat out veto, you know, on the 10th, then obviously we have to January 5th, the day before swearing in day, to be able to override the veto.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we are. So,
what else is on the legislative agenda this year?
Well, after I'm done with the call with you, I got to vote on the FY21 budget, which is six months. That's already 6 months into the budget year. We're probably going to pass a 2-year temporary budget to give the governor his 10 days from today. So today's what? Today's the 4th?
Yep.
So he's going to get to the 14th to line item veto the budget, as well as amend the outside sections, as well as veto or accept the remaining budget. So, you know, we might be back doing overrides again. And we got a little bit of money for Quincy. We talked about this last time, but, you know, we got $95,000 for overtime patrols for the summer for Crenshaw Drive and Crenshaw Parkway. You know, we got $50,000 for the firefighter department hazmat unit, $75,000 for the Quincy Health Department to address COVID. We got $25,000 for Germantown Neighborhood Center. As people may be aware, they have a food pantry that's really under a lot of stress right now.
Yes.
$75,000 for Quincy Human Resources, again, another agency under a lot of stress and human service need. You know, we got $28.6 million for Chapter 70 education money. I know it's not education reform, but given the current budget crisis, you know, we have to postpone the dramatic increases in that. To put an example, we're supposed to get closer to $34 million in education. So about $20.2 million in unrestricted local aid the city can spend on whatever they want. And there's also other grants, COVID-related grants and standard grants that were pre-COVID, so to speak, which has now become standard because it's not COVID, that the city has applied for, which is still being processed at the current situation. So, you know, the budget is balanced. It's going to the governor today. We'll see how it plays out. We have global warming bill still pending. We have a transportation bond bill, which is $18 billion the governor wanted, which we had funding mechanisms prior to the pandemic that would work. The funding mechanisms we're using post-pandemic or in pandemic is not going to work. I'm not sure how conference committee is going to resolve that. We have economic development bond bill, of which a portion of that bill is COVID-related. We've got some bonding monies over there. So that's still pending. And we got a healthcare bill, which is a telemedicine bill coming from the House, and sort of a drug price bill out of the Senate. I'm still very confused how that works, how that's going to work out. We got really two very different topic matters in healthcare. So, you know, right now it's December 4th, and about a month or so's time, the session officially ends and swearing in day starts the first Wednesday after the first Tuesday. So I believe that's January 6th, if I'm right.
Correct.
I get very confused about my dates now. and I don't know how swearing a day is going to go because the chamber, you know, is by nature not social distanceable. And obviously, thankful to the voters to have me back again. But I, like any employee, has to fill out the paperwork.
Right.
Associate, which I don't think will be a problem. The PDF them over, I can mail them back. I mean, it's not like that's a huge hurdle, but I do need to get sworn in. Otherwise, I'm not really your rep until I'm sworn in.
Yep. Reaching out to you, how's the best way to do that, Jackie?
Telephone's been really good. 617-722-2014. 617-722-2014. Leave voicemail of anybody. Just pick a person. The staff checks it, and we'll make sure it gets to the right person in my office. Doesn't matter who you pick. And I will hear about it because we do have 2 to 3 staff meetings every week at this point, as well as email at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. Email has been a little better now as we go into the cooler months. I'm not getting 150 emails a day, which is thankful. So I probably have a higher percentage of senior email now. Obviously, tackychan.org on the website. We're posting up new information as COVID's shifting around. And of course, the Tacky Chan Facebook page. State Representative Tacky Chan is where you'll find the public information on information out there. You go to my personal Facebook page, it's not really as useful because we're just trying to share stuff off the public page. So you don't have to be a Facebook user to go see the public page, by the way. People think you have to be a Facebook member to see a public page. You do not. It's just like any other website. You Google it up, you search on Bing, you find it.
All right. Good to know. Good to see you, Tacky. Thanks for your time.
Well, good to see you, Joe, and I'll see you in another week or so.
Yeah, that sounds good. Till then, stay safe, be well.
You too. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.